Two sisters lived on separate sides of the states. One in NYC and the other LA. They both moved to Chicago and decided to stay. Now here's their playful podcast packed with Kid Lit Parlay.
Children's books.
Are they really that great?
Talking children's books is with Kate and Hughes 8.
Children's books.
Why, what, and how?
Hughes 8 and Kate will break it down for you now.
Kate, I want to tell you something crazy.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm leaving here last week after our recording, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I drive home.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pulling into my street. When I see an animal crossing the street ahead of me, and it was so weird that I still don't know what I saw. So picture this. It's bigger than a cat. It's on all fours. It's got the head of like a rodent of some sort. It's got a big, thick, furry tail. It's not dog-like. What was the animal?
I don't know, Betsy.
It was a fisher, Kate. I think I saw a a fisher cat. You ever heard of those?
No.
They're starting to come to Illinois. I have never heard of one. And then it shows up in a children's book, and I read it recently. And then I saw one, Kate. I swear to God, I saw a fisher cat.
Congratulations.
I saw a fisher cat. Thank you. Thank you. I just had to get that off my chest.
I really know what to say to that.
A week ago. I've been waiting so long to tell you about it.
Okay.
And then, and while we're at it, who are you?
Me, the confused Kate.
And me, the also confused Betsy. If any of you listening know what this animal was, please let us know at FuseKate8@gmail.com. What is this podcast that
it's we do? Fuse 8 and Kate.
That's right. And what do we do on it?
We talk about children's picture books.
And whether they're
good
or
fisher cats.
Excellent. We have a special guest.
Yes.
Yes. It was seated to my right.
Yes.
At the right hand of the Betsy.
Uh-huh.
Is none other than my husband, Matt Bird. Yay! Hi, Matt.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on.
Matt is going to do, and we have never done his favorite picture book.
Oh.
Not a day of our lives. And we're going to do it today. Do you have any clue what his favorite picture book is?
No.
All right. So this is going to be a treat. Going to be a treat. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Are you ready for it?
Let's go.
Here we go. A booda 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 booda. Boo!
I had trouble in getting to Sala Solu. Solu?
Sure. Who's it by?
Dr. Seuss?
Yes! It's a Dr. Seuss you've never seen before.
Nope.
It's never been turned into a film. It doesn't have its own TV show. There's no Netflix Sala Solu show. None of that stuff. Go read that thing.
I'll be back tomorrow.
Okay. Okay, Matt, I have a question for you.
Yes, what's your question?
What is the reason that you think that this book isn't as well remembered as other Seuss books?
I have truly no idea. I've wondered that many times over the years. I think this is his best book. I think this is the greatest book he ever wrote and drew. And I meet people, they just have never heard of it. They don't know what it is. I think it is just wildly entertaining. I think it is deeply profound. I think it is his greatest book. And I've never understood, you know, I grew up with it as... It was one of the few picture books, period, that we owned. Generally speaking, we would go to the library and there was a long period in my life where I would just get Dr. Seuss books and I would just check out Dr. Seuss books over and over and over again before we owned this one, I think. It was sort of shocking to me later to realize this book is not as well known.
Yeah, I had never heard of it prior to meeting you.
Really?
No, never heard its name mentioned. So I mean, my theory of anything of why it hasn't been adapted or remembered is possibly its length and its size, but a lot of Seuss is long. I mean, as I found to my chagrin when I attempted to read Horton Hatches the Egg to a group of squirmy preschoolers, that is the longest book ever created in the history of man.
Yeah, I think most of his books were 64 pages, but this one... is just packed.
It just packs so much plot. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very packed. And I think it's a little more serious. I think that, you know, his more serious books, like, you know, obviously the Butter Battle book is never going to be turned into a movie. Obviously, you know, what's the book about being old and in a nursing home?
Oh, my that God. His most depressing book. Yeah.
His most depressing
You're
book.
You're only old once.
You're only old once. That one's never going to be turned into a movie.
No.
I think this sort of gets lumped in with those. This was sort of a later book and sort of, you know, but The Lorax was also a later serious book. And has been adapted and celebrated many times. So that doesn't entirely explain it.
Yeah, well, the didacticism is not as clearly defined here as it would be in, say, The Lorax or The Butterbattle Bill book or The Sneetches or something like that.
Yeah, it's a book with that has a powerful lesson, but it's not, you know, it's not as, yeah, didactic. I feel like this is not a book that kids are going to go like, oh, you know, time to eat my spinach. This is a book that is just entirely delightful and enjoyable, but, you know, you're going to come away with it with a message.
Yeah, but I do wonder if that is part of the reason why it's not remembered, because it's easier for gatekeepers and adults to be like, oh, good, this is the don't go to war one. I'm just going to give that to it. Here, this one's about taking care of the environment. But this one doesn't slot neatly into one of those categories.
The one place this was sort of adapted is in Susco the Musical. What the closest thing they have to a villain in Susco the Musical is from this book. General Genghis Khan Schmitz from this book shows up as a villain in Susco the Musical.
Okay, that's interesting. I completely forgot about it. Character, so well, that's the most warlike. Well, that's not true. Butterbattle book, but yeah, interesting. 40 years later, she walks in.
Who are you?
A husk.
Where am I?
Where once there was my sister.
Yeah, it's a long one.
Yeah, it's a big old book.
Sure is.
Big old chunky, clunky book.
I'm gonna try and get through this as fast as I can.
Why don't you summarize that book that you got there, Kate?
This thing was perfectly fine where he was, and then he had one bad day, which turned into a bad few months, and then he realized he can solve all of his problems with violence. The end.
Explain more.
Well, let's start at the beginning.
Right.
First, we meet said thing, mm-hmm. who just tripped and hurt his bum. Anyway.
He's one of those furry Seuss creatures that don't really have a name, but they appear in a lot of his books.
It is male. It is determined that it is a male creature.
Where does it determine that?
At the very end, he's called a young man.
So. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. So because he tripped and sprained his tail, he's like, okay, cool. I'm just going to watch out for rocks. And then while he's watching out for rocks, he gets bit in the tail by this thing.
The already injured tail.
A Quilligan quail, mm-hmm. which, you know, I mean, it's kind of like when you stub your toe and then you drop something on it. I feel like that's this poor guy's tail.
Yeah.
Just
yeah, yeah. Where you bite your inside of your cheek and then you keep biting it by accident.
But how has he never had a bad thing happen before? How has he lived this long without a single trouble in his life?
This is the feel that to you.
If there's one thing we've learned from the current political situation, it's that everybody idealizes the past and says, oh, remember back in 2019 when America had no troubles at all? Then people, you know, we've seen this happen, and I think that he has someone who...
So he's had trouble.
I think that, yes, once trouble happens, he then thinks, oh, remember back when I had no troubles at all? Which mm-hmm. probably wasn't actually true. But he feels like, you know, surely there was a time when I had no troubles.
Sure. Gotcha. Well, his solution is to have his eyes go in different directions. And how is this not a tattoo?
Yes, your tattoo. That is your tattoo because it is.
It's the most disturbing Seuss image I think I may
He's
have ever seen.
He's doing the old aught-8 with his hands and his
pupils
eyes.
Are in opposite directions.
They are so unnerving.
So one bad thing happens to another. First, he gets troubles from above, and then he gets troubles from below. And while he's having all these things attack him, mm-hmm. a stranger comes up on a camel and says, look, I'll take you to this city of Sala Salu, where they never have any troubles. At least very few. And I'm thinking, guy, just go home. Just go home.
Yeah.
You don't need to go with a stranger to a random city. Stranger danger.
Right. This is Stranger Danger, the book.
But then you turn the page and he is clearly with the stranger.
Yes.
And I think this is the first time that the camel that the stranger is riding has heard the news of how far they have to travel. Because it's been all day and our main character's like, mister, when do we get to this wonderful town? And the stranger says, young fellow, at sunrise we'll drive to Sala Salu. And we'll have no more troubles. And the camel's looking, Hamda, what? Say that again? How far is it now? Well, the camel doesn't like that. And he gets very sick.
Yeah.
And so then they have to carry said camel up a mountain. And this is where I wrote, It's nice that they didn't leave the camel to die on the side of a mountain way up in the sky. Nope, they dragged the camel, and then the stranger decides, pulling is for losers, and I'm not a loser, so I'm going to make the loser pull both of myself and the camel, which is exactly what he does. Mm-hmm. His logic is, look, I'll pick the best roads and tell you where to go, and we'll find a good doctor more quickly, you know? You know. How is picking the best roads going to help them find a vet more quickly? What's the tell me that logic.
I don't know, but the little guy fell for it. Our hero is just willing to go along. It takes two to tango.
I mean, it's, you know, this book came out in 1965, and it's very much, I think, a book about the baby boom generation who about to turn 20. And, you know, he says at this point, oh, you're making me do this just because I'm young. And there's this sense of, you know, the whole book I always sort of assumed had been like a response to the hippie movement. No, this was 65, right before the hippie movement came into existence. And but there's this sense of, we are the young, we are being, you know, the older generation is treating us poorly. Mm-hmm. And this is the beginning of that theme in the book, which then just develops more and more and more of, you know, we are trying to escape to the perfect land. But we are burdened. We cannot do it because we are so burdened by the older generation who is exploiting us.
Well, the answer was just to take a bus. That was the whole solution to this problem. Why didn't he take a bus in the first place? Because they found a vet for the camel. The camel's out for 20 weeks. The stranger says, go hop on this bus and it'll take you to where you need to go. The main character, we don't know his name. I'm just going to keep calling him the main character.
Yeah, he doesn't have a name, does he? You gave him a name in your treatment. But...
Yes. So I will go ahead and say I give him a name because I later was, when I was a working screenwriter, I was pitching and someone said, oh, we own the rights to all the Dr. Seuss books, by the way. You want to pitch us a Dr. Seuss adaptation? And I said, yes, his greatest book and the book that would easily make the best movie is I Had Trouble Getting to Sawyer's Loo. And I pitched an adaptation and I named the character Kenny Kachu and gave him two brothers, Mitchell Kachu and Babalu Kachu. But he is unnamed in the book.
So Kenny.
Kenny.
Let's go with Kenny.
Call him Kenny.
So Kenny gets to the bus stop and he finds a note that says, sorry, the bus ran over four nails that punctured all the tires. So you got to walk. Good luck. Signed by the bus line president, Horace P. Sweet. And I don't know if there's another author that is like the named Horace as much as Dr. Seuss.
I think you're right. I think Horace was his go-to.
So 100 miles later, wow. Which it's pretty far, a storm happens where he runs into some no-name character who is like, look, I gotta get myself to Palm Springs, which... Why would you put a real place?
That's a real place. Well, Kalamazoo showed up in his books all the time, too, and he had fake stuff, so...
But Palm Springs isn't, like, a funny name. It's just
maybe
in California.
Maybe it was an inside joke. I
think that was a real place people would go during rainy months to, you know, I'm going to spend the winter in Palm Springs.
That
so
makes
I
sense.
Think this is just, like, a literal thing of, like, yes, this is the
what
sort of place this actual person would actually go.
Well, yeah. And the guy's like, look, I'm going to jet... you can take over my house. Keep in mind, the house is right on the edge of a cliff.
You can see that. This is not a Frank Lloyd Wright house where they figured out how this works.
But if you've been walking 100 miles...
Yeah, sure, you're tired.
And it's pouring, you'll take whatever shelter you can get.
Sure.
So he goes inside this house, and he's trying to sleep, but he's freezing, and he's with a family of owls and a family of mice. Did you know that on the average night, owls can eat up to 12 mice? And I see 5 owls and 3 mice.
There were more mice to begin with at the beginning of the night.
And then the house falls over the cliff and the owls take the mice into their mouths.
Yes. On their, they perch them on their beaks and fly off at them. They're all getting along. This is a nice, nice story.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's breakfast, lunch, and dinner right there. So now that the house has been floating in this water for 12 days.
Oy, oy, oy. Those mice look pretty tasty now, don't they?
There's a rope that is thrown down to him. He grabs it. He climbs up the rope to discover a general General Genghis Khan Schmitz is his name.
It works because of the Schmitz.
They're going to war, and get in line. You're a private first class, which, okay, does that mean, I mean, is he going to get armor? Is he going to get a big lance?
A cool lance,
is he
yeah.
going to get a sword? Is he going to get something for joining this army?
Right.
Let me
What's
tell
the
you
pay
what he,
look like?
Let me tell you what he gets, Betsy.
What's he get?
He gets a bean shooter with one bean. You know what you can kill with a one bean?
What can you kill with one
shooter?
Bean?
Nothing.
Right.
The answer is nothing.
That's
so everybody else is wearing tin-plated pants, and he is, and they have swords and armor, and even their bizarre mounts are armored. Mm-hmm. But our hero is still completely naked, except for his bean shooter.
That's true. He spends this entire book naked.
And with a sprained tail.
Yeah. He looks a lot like the same character in that Dr. Seuss book where, remember the one with the haunted pants?
Yeah.
Same guy.
Pants with no one inside
yeah.
him.
This is before the guy got pants.
Well, it turns out that what they're fighting, they thought there was only one. Well, there's actually a crap ton of them. And Genghis Khan Schmitz and his army, they all run away, leaving our one poor Kenny.
Poor Kenny.
Just by himself.
Kenny doesn't look that different from them either. Yeah.
Well, he's a different shade of
yeah.
orange.
Yeah, that's true.
They're yellow,
and they
I guess.
Have, like, Grinch grins.
And they're just getting ready to eat him when they find a... When Kenny finds an old pipe and he decides, you know what, I'm going to Mario this and I'm just going to jump in. And this is the Seuss illustration for peace out.
Peace out is definitely a peace out move, yes.
And he falls into vent number 5.
Oh.
Now, vent number 5 is a tunnel with billions of birds.
It's a psychedelic tunnel.
And there's garbage and there's horns and he was in there for 3 days. Everything is here. But what caught my attention the most was at the very bottom, you got one guy who was in a bed reading,
uh-huh.
and another guy chained to that bed.
Yeah. Moving it looks like.
Right.
Yeah.
What is the, what's going
There's
on here?
There's a whole here? Thing going on there. You're what never going to know. You're this... never going to know what this deal is.
And then he finds a hole, a trap door. He pops his head out of the trapdoor, and it turns out he's on the banks of the River Wahoo, so he must not be far from Sala Salu.
Or Kalamazoo.
And he finds a dude with a hat, and he's like, that's the guy. That's the guy that's going to make my day.
The doorman of Sala Salu.
Yeah.
Yes. He goes up to the doorman, and he's like, hey, let me in. And the doorman's like, no.
About that.
So there's only one key to enter Sala Salu, and they have a key slapping slippered. Slippard?
S-L-I-P-P-A-R-D. Slippered.
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 And he can't kill it, and it's bad luck to kill it, so they're stuck because they can't get in. But they made one?
Fire exits were not as big a thing back then?
But if it's swapping keys, it's not changing locks. So why didn't you make multiple keys and just... If the lock didn't change, right?
The lock's the same, but there's only one key, right?
Right. So why didn't you make multiple copies of the
key? Too late now.
There's only one. There's only one place to put the key in. There's only one door with one lock on it.
Why didn't you make backups?
Well, because any key you have, the slipper is going to knock out of your hand.
Just jam it in there. The thing's got to sleep at some point, right? No?
I have literally read this book, you know, maybe more than any other book, and I am noticing for the very first time that the doorman has 6 fingers.
Yes,
oh!
and I wrote in my notes, the 6 fingers are freaking me out. I don't like
it. It's the 6-fingered man.
I don't like it. But I also know that if horror movies have taught me anything, that if there's a room that requires a key, it's probably not very good on the other side.
That's
so
true.
So maybe...
It's the Bluebeard principle.
Maybe, you know, the doorman's doing him a favor by
yeah.
not letting him in on the other side.
I think that might be true.
So the doorman says, look, I'm...
Who still has 6 fingers.
Yeah, he's like, I'm leaving. Huh. I'm going to go to the city of Bula Bubal on the banks of the beautiful River Woowall. Okay. And
keep talking.
And they don't have any trouble, so why don't you come along with me? And Kenny's like, no.
I'm out.
No.
Big time.
You know what I've been through? Mm-hmm. You know what's going to solve all my problems? A big pink bat.
Yeah.
That's...
With nails in it?
No, he's just swinging it.
Oh, okay. Because so it looks like it has nails in it from here, which would be really impressive.
So the answer to this book is get a bat. A big bat. And solve your problems with violence. The end.
My troubles are going to have troubles with me, he says at the end.
That's yeah. Right. That's right.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Matt and I already discussed why we theorize as to why no one has ever heard of this story, which is clearly the most epic of all the Dr. Seuss stories. I'm trying to think of there's the birthday book, Happy Birthday to You, and that goes a lot of places, but it's not like a quest.
It is very strange that they've never turned Happy Birthday to You into a movie, because that was another one lot as a kid, and that's got a pretty epic story.
But also, this one they would play it on a kid's birthday everywhere, all the time. Yeah.
This one is so much more epic. This one is, this is sort of Dr. Seuss's version of Candide. And it's got, it's attempting to fit the entirety of, human experience. It's sort of, I don't know when Pippin came out. Pippin was another 70s. Sort of story in the same vein that came out about 10 years later.
Yeah.
And, it's a coming-of-age story. It's a Bildungsroman. Mm. And it's a story that, tries to... It's very much a story about its time. It's a story... What's the story about? It's like all great literature. It's ahead of its time, and it's writing about the age that's about to happen. And, my mom always said that if you want to read about the Holocaust, you read Kafka. If you want to read about the Wall Street crash, you read Fitzgerald. If you want to read about, the Russian Revolution, you read Tolstoy, because these are authors writing right before these things happened, and they can see what's going to happen. And they're writing about, Kafka didn't live to see the Holocaust, but he saw it all coming. And he, he wrote about it better than anybody wrote about it afterwards. And I think that this book is all about the years 1965 to 1975.
Mm-hmm.
And he is seeing it coming. And it is, this is a book about, it's interesting. It's a book about escapism. It's a book about how you shouldn't escape from your troubles and you should face your troubles. It's interesting to see, could this be seen as an anti-drug book? Because when you think about hippies and escapism, when you think about, the baby boomer generation and escapism, you think about drugs. And, you think about, obviously, Solace Lou by the banks of the beautiful River Wahoo is, sort of like, it's reminiscent of...
H&F Puff and stuff.
It's reminiscent of H&S Puff and stuff. It's reminiscent of, Xanadu and Kublai Khan. And,
right.
We've even got a Khan in here, which, of course, was itself a drug-induced fever dream. It's sort of, the closest he got to an anti-drug book to a certain extent, although I don't think anybody reading it would see it as an anti-drug book. But it's an anti-escapism book, which is every generation has their escapism.
Yeah. Okay. Ratings time.
Okay, you have to let me read it because I did it in the style of
Dr.
Seuss.
Oh no, here we go, do it.
It's very long. I wish it were quicker. This may be your favorite, but I don't want to bicker. I don't like how his solution is a big pink bat, and that's coming from someone who last week liked the bad cat. I also don't see how there was only one key to this magical place. How could that be? Your rating may be high. I'm afraid I'm a 4. At least I can say it wasn't a bore.
There you go. All right.
In rhyme.
And I'm not going to rhyme at all. I see what you're saying about the bat and all these things. I do like it. I do prefer it to a fair number of later Seusses, where later Seusses got a little wonky and super preachy, and as we were talking about, incredibly depressing in the case of You're Only Old Once, which is maybe what would be his worst. It would be that's not his worst, but it's up there. I like this one. I'm a 6.
I say this is the greatest picture book of all time. I would therefore give it a 10.
Oh wow, we almost never go to 10, so there you go. Yeah,
well, even right. With just Betsy and my scores combined, it's a 5.
All right,
which means it's a classic.
It's a classic. Woo!
Except for those creepy 6 fingers.
Yeah, I like those.
I don't like those 6 fingers.
Letters time.
Ooh.
All right, we're running out of time. I can only do one of the 2, so we're going to do the one from David Small. David Small wrote in about the gardener and gave us some information that I don't think is anywhere else. So listen to this, folks. We did this book recently. He wrote me and he said, "One of the best weeks of my life was when I spent in Manhattan, looking for a rooftop. For several scenes in The Gardener, I needed a really junky old tar paper covered rooftop, bristling with vents and pipes. The word was out at FSG about what I was looking for, which got me invited to numerous people's apartments and numerous visits to rooftops, none of which were suitable. Too clean, too much white gravel, bland, uninteresting. Finally, the day before I was to leave, Kate Kubert, then the publicist for children's books at FSG, told me she had the perfect roof for me. Indeed, it was better than perfect. I spent the better part of a broiling summer afternoon drawing her fire escape and the junk scrape that was her apartment roof. I was in heaven. That was years ago, of course. I don't know if I would be so intrepid now, but all that is beside the point."
Wow.
So there you go. I don't think anyone has ever received this information before, and that's exclusive to us, folks.
That's awesome. Thanks, David. Nice.
Thank you, David. Grown-up things we like.
Well, the guest first.
Fish or cats? No. Okay, your turn.
Grown-up thing I like? I am currently rewatching the complete works of James Cameron, so I'm going to say Terminator and Aliens, which are sort of grown-up things. You know, they're not appropriate for kids, so there's that, but they're also not tremendously sophisticated, but they're incredibly beautiful movies. I just watched them while I worked out on my elliptical runner, and absolutely loved them.
Very nice.
All right, very good.
Well, a while back, you gave me a few books you received, I think, at a convention, and one of them was The Only Woman in the Room by Marie Benedict.
Mm-hmm.
One of the blurbs on the back of the book said, "Once begun, must be finished," and they weren't wrong. I flew through this book in 3 days. It's the story of the actress Hedy Lamarr. It goes through her early life as a Jewish woman in a very Catholic Austria, to her abusive marriage, to an arms manufacturer who went from wanting Austria to be free to working with Hitler, to her escape to L.A., to her time creating inventions to help the Allies defeat the Nazis in World War II. She worked with a composer to create a frequency-hopping invention in which radio signals transmitted from a ship or an airline to its torpedo and would constantly change frequencies. And while the Navy denied her invention because she was a woman, it's in part because of that we have cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
So it's such a crazy story about a beautiful, strong, yet flawed woman, and you will fly through it. So the ending, it's not as satisfying as I would have hoped, but I think it's because it just leaves you wanting more. So I highly recommend The Only Woman in the Room by Marie Benedict.
Excellent choice. Miss Benedict has done many books that are very popular in our library. That was one of them. I first learned about Hedy Lamarr because of children's books. There were some picture book bios that covered this as well. So there you go. What are their names, Betsy? Moving on. Mine is an episode. I haven't done a podcast episode in a while. Maintenance Phase, which went on a big old hiatus for quite some time, is back, baby. And they did an entire episode on Jamie Oliver. Jamie Oliver, not a fellow I knew much about. Turns out, not a great guy. And they will tell you why. Oh, they will tell you why. It is highly amusing. It is their most recent episode. Do go out if you want to learn about the horribleness of Jamie Oliver. All will be revealed to you. And that is on Maintenance Phase, the podcast.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think you said last time that you were going to give me a book with lots of blood and violence.
Decided to do this. So next week, I promise there will be some violence.
I mean,
I can't promise blood.
You gave
violence.
Me a big pink bat here. So
I gave you a bat? There was a lot of biting in this book. So there you go. So Matt, thank you so much for joining us, for finally getting to be on our show.
Thank you so much for having me. We've planned this for years, and now you can come on my show. So everybody, check out my shows.
Mm-hmm.
My show, The Secrets of Story Podcast, with co-host James Kennelly and soon to be guest starring Betsy Bird, is about how to write stories, and Marvel Reread Club with my brother Steve Bird reads through the entirety of Marvel Comics, and we're currently in 1966, so right around this same time we were discussing today. So by all means, check out those two podcasts.
Very cool.
Nice.
All right, and until I bring you the blood and guts you require, I've been Betsy.
I'm Kate.
And I'm Matt.
Bye. Fuse 8 and Kate is a Fuse Number 8 production. You can reach us at fusekate8@gmail.com. You can follow our podcast on Twitter at Fuse_Kate. You can follow us on Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky at Fuse8Kate. That's Fuse number 8 Kate. Listen to us on Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, Audible, Amazon Music, or Player FM. Or follow us on iTunes and rate our podcast if you're so inclined. Our music is by Haddon Kime, and our logo is by Andrea Cerumi. And our very own Kenny Kachu is Drew Atienza. Fuse 8 and Kate is a creation of Kate Atienza and Betsy Bird.